Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Heredity Podcast with me, Dr. James Bergen. Now, the vast majority of animals reproduce sexually, and for that, you need different sexes. But how exactly are different sexes determined? And what happens if a developing embryo receives conflicting signals? Well, in today's episode, we're going to explore these questions, as we delve into the fascinating paper, High Elevation Increases the Risk of Y Chromosome Loss in Alpine Skink Populations with Sex Reversal. This is a really eye-opening study into the incredibly complex processes behind biological sex determination. Welcome to the Heredity Podcast. Can you please both introduce yourselves?
Okay, yeah. Thank you for the invitation. I'm Duminda Dissanayake. I'm originally from Sri Lanka. Currently, I'm doing my PhD at the University of Canberra and CSIRO Australia. My current research combines ecological and genomic principles together to study the evolution of sex determining system, especially in reptiles.
My name's Claire Hollerley. I work at the Australian National Wildlife Collection, which is one of the seven major research collections at CSIRO, which is Australia's national science agency.
Well, thank you for joining me. And I guess the paper that we're here to discuss focuses on sex determination in lizards. But I guess just to start off, I wonder if we could zoom out a bit and explore what we mean by sex determination in general.
Sex determination, known as the development pathway that commits the embryo to either become a boy or the girl. The genes underlying this process are the sex determination genes. In considering reptiles, the sex determination mechanism is remarkably diverse, ranging from systems that are under complete genetic control, that means the genotypic sex determination, to those that are highly dependent upon the temperature, we call the temperature-dependent sex determination, that embryo experience during the development.
Yeah, so simply put, really, sex determination is, you know, the process by which a cue is turned into a phenotype. So something will trigger you to become a male or a female. And one of the parts of this study that we're going to look at is how those cues can interact. So for humans, sex is determined by our sex chromosomes, and that is going to be partially true for our lizards coming up. But sex in other species can also be determined by the environment, so the temperature that you experience when you're an embryo. And that's also part of the story that we're going to be telling you today.
Perfect. And I guess we'll get to the sort of specific lizard in a second. But I guess what you're really looking at in this paper is sex reversal. And that might be a bit of an unusual concept for a lot of people. So what do you mean by sex reversal?
So as I said, basically in the earlier comment, your sex can be determined either by a genetic cue from your sex chromosomes or perhaps by an environmental cue such as temperature. But what we're interested in is the process of sex reversal, and it's really when these two cues kind of collide. So when you have a competing signal from your sex chromosomes telling you to do one thing and the environment telling you to do another, there's this process called sex reversal where the temperature in this case can actually override what your sex chromosomes are telling you to be. So you might have the sex chromosomes telling you that you're to be a male, develop into a male, but the environment can then, if it's extreme enough, override that signal and then you might become a female instead. So wow. What that means is that you end up as an adult where your sex chromosomes are that of what we would consider a male, but you physically look female. Wow. So that's what we mean when we say sex reversal. So there's a mismatch, basically. There's a mismatch between the sex chromosomes and what you physically look like. It's a very interesting and surprisingly common phenomenon if you are among the reptile, fish, amphibian world. It's not unusual at all. So this might be unusual for, you know, mammals. It doesn't happen that often. But it's pretty common in other species.
I mean, it does sound very interesting and very complex. And I think for a lot of people listening, it probably will be quite unusual. But I guess you've alluded a couple of times to the lizards that you've been working on. And the one that you chose to study was the Eastern Three-Lined Skink. And I wonder why you chose them. What makes them so interesting?
The Eastern Three-Lined Skink is one of the remarkable and fascinating skink which lives in Australia, and also this species endemic to Australia. The reason behind choosing this specific species for this study has a bit of a story behind it. This skink has a mechanism of sex determination similar to that of human, like us. Male have XY sex chromosome and female have XX chromosome system. However, when the natural eggs are exposed below 20 Celsius in a laboratory condition, the underlying genetic mechanism is overridden by the cold temperature, and that leads to producing pentypic males, but they're bearing an XX chromosome. That means genetically they have the female genes. As Claire mentioned in above, this mechanism called as a sex reversal in this species.
Can I add a little bit of a backstory also about how Bassiana kind of came to the forefront of our research team? So there was some preliminary work done by another group where they were looking at sex ratios in the wild. And it was, I guess, their observation that the sex ratios dramatically changed depending on the altitude. So if you've got normal chromosomal sex determination, you'd sort of expect a 50-50 boys to girls kind of ratio. And so it's pretty unusual when you start to see, you know, large biases one way or another away from that 50-50 ratio. It's sort of as your signal as a scientist to go, something strange is going on here. And this other group noticed that basically there was a relationship with elevation on alpine regions within this species. And that was when kind of the first idea that sex reversal might be happening in this species kind of came up. But then there's the process to actually sort of prove that. I guess you've got to really do the genetic work and you've got to do all the field work, which Duminda has done in this amazing project to really just tie that down, looking at, you know, how many individuals have got that mismatch between their genetic component and their phenotype. So in our group, we work on sex reversal in not just this species. We work in the bearded dragon that's kind of the mirror image of this lovely skink, and it reverses at high temperatures. And these are kind of our two focal species. And we always kind of joke in the team that, you know, we set out looking for species where this might happen. And the first one that we looked at had sex reversal occurring. And Bassiana, the second one that we looked at, also turns out had sex reversal happening. And so we always kind of joke that either we're incredibly lucky as a research team that we've got 100% success rate, or in fact, it may be a quite common phenomenon and we're maybe not as lucky as we might think.
Either way, I think there'll be a lot of people listening that are quite envious of that luck, of that streak. Yeah. And I guess in this paper, was your specific aim to look at this link between sex reversal and elevation? Was that what you set out to find?
Yeah, our broad aim was to find whether the sex reversal individual lives in the wild. And if yes, what is the frequency of sex reversal in the wild population within alone an elevation gradient?
Perfect. I guess now is a good time to kind of get into exactly what it is that you did. And I'm assuming that the first thing you did was quite a lot of field work. And I wonder if you could just kind of explain where you went, what populations you sampled, how you decided which populations to sample, that kind of thing.
Yeah, the field work in Australia was a wonderful experience and it added a whole lot of new knowledge. So basically what I did was I selected 10 field locations along an elevation gradient in southeastern Australia, spanning a large portion of the distribution of our study species. Then I conducted our field work in areas where the lizards were most abundant, that is in natural open areas. Also, we did our field work in areas artificially cleared for overheaded hydroelectric power lines or fire band strain, roads and or tracks inside the forest. And adult skink like to aggregate in open area during the nesting season. Usually it's happening in mid-November to early December. Then adult skink captured by hand, either when active or inactive. Then we got the measurements and phenotypic sex. And after that, we collected tail snips for the our DNA analysis.
Can I also just say how amazing and intense the amount of field work that Duminda has done for this project is? And we've all been really impressed because in our other model species, we've been slogging away for, you know, I think over a decade now. And that work combined with all museum specimens in Australia, 10 years worth of field trips, Duminda has managed to meet the number of samples that we have collected collectively in, you know, over a decade of combined work plus museum contributions in a single PhD. So it's pretty mammoth effort that he's
field
managed to
champion.
Achieve. In, fieldwork champion in a very, very short period of time. I also want to add there's some pretty significant challenges given that I'm sure you're aware of the mega fires that happened in Australia last year.
Yeah, for sure.
Duminda's field sites were majorly affected by that catastrophic event as well. So he's overcome a lot of challenges in one PhD, and we're really pleased to see this work coming out in Heredity, despite all those challenges.
For sure. No, the wildfires did look like a bit of a nightmare for any kind of field biology in Australia. But I guess you went out, you collected tons of samples, and I'm really curious about what you then did with these. So how did you actually identify cases of sex reversal?
Yeah, the cytogenetic is the more classical method is to identify sex chromosome. But when you are working with a large number of samples, we cannot do the cytogenetic to see the chromosome, because it is really a time-consuming and more costly procedure. Except in a special case, we need to see the chromosome. So we developed a new technique known as whole genome subtraction method. Actually, this is a new technique used in first time to identify and isolate the sex chromosome sequencing in reptiles. Using this technique, we isolated 7 Y chromosome specific conics. Simply, that is a big chunk of sequencing. And then after that, we develop a specific primer, and then we develop a PCR sex test to identify the true XY male. Those who are bearing XX chromosome in a phenotypic male was category as a sex reverse male.
Cool. And I guess, what were you finding? Were you finding the strong link between sex reversals and elevation?
Yeah, of course. With our study, we found a significant correlation between environmental variables, in this case, environmental temperature, and sex reversal in the wild adult population of Passiana duperi for the first time in a reptile species with male heterochromic sex determination. We found that there is a high frequency of sex reversal occurring at the alpine populations and decreasing in the frequency to zero with the decreasing elevation. Yeah, we provide good evidence in this paper that the sex reversal can be a biological significant process in alpine population of three-line skink.
Yeah, so basically that whole genome subtraction method is a new kind of, I guess, in silico subtraction, where you compare the two genomes and just basically isolate which parts are, you know, either male or female specific. And that's what Dominda used to develop those high throughput markers. And they're key. If you can't tell what the sex chromosomes are, you can't find sex reversal. So that's, you know, step one, you've got to have that. But you also have to have the phenotype. And so you need to know both sides of the coin to figure it out. And yeah, I think one of the most sort of stunning things about this study that Dominda has done is the fact that there was this really strong, significant correlation with elevation. So they start out at low elevation, 50-50 sex ratios with no sex reversal, just normal XY sex determination going on. And the higher you get, up, 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 the more sex reversal there is. What was the final sex ratio in your highest elevation site, Dominda? Do you remember?
No, it's in Mount Ginini was my highest elevation. There's a 18.4% of sex reversal happening in that population. We also modeled the impact of this under Fisher frequency-dependent selection to show that at the high elevations, population risks the losses of the Y chromosome and transition to the temperature-dependent sex determination. When you are going high elevation, they are losing their Y chromosome. So we expect the over 2,000 meter elevation, the population could be a losses of their Y chromosome.
So at that high site, basically, you've got this really high rate of sex reversal, and that means there's more X chromosomes around, basically. So the more sex reversal there is, the more X chromosomes there are. And so the higher you go, the colder you go, the more sex reversal there is, the more X chromosomes there are. One of the questions that this paper poses is, if you go high enough and cold enough, can you just get to a point where there's no Y chromosome at all?
I mean, I guess one of the things that's quite interesting here is, I'm wondering what the impact of the sex reversals has on the population genetics of these lizards. Like, is it a good thing? Is it a negative thing? And given that we are experiencing climate change, what impact might that have on these lizards kind of going forward?
Yes, actually, we don't know about these sex reverse male can reproduce and reproductively viable. So our future focus is doing that kind of experiment to see whether these sex reverse male can reproduce. So the key message coming out of this study is related to the current hot topic of climate change. The current climate change has significant impact on several aspects of the biology and ecology of many reptile species of the world, which some has led to population decline or other severe in threats.
Yeah, so I guess the likelihood of climate change impacting sex reversal and thus, you know, the loss of sex chromosomes potentially, I guess, firstly, sort of depends on what happens and your response to temperature. So in this species, in Bassiana the skink, they reverse at cold temperatures. So I guess, you know, one might argue that if, you know, we're sort of on average getting warmer, which is an assumption, right? That's a pretty broad assumption. You know, maybe sex reversal is actually going to become less common in this species, maybe. But the problem is also that, you know, climate change is not that simple. It's not necessarily just always going to be getting warmer. What we're also expecting is that the environment's going to become more variable. And so if the frequency of extreme cold events is also increasing, and if that corresponds with the time that these things are eggs and in that sensitive period, then, you know, you could actually have the opposite happen. You could have more sex reversal if there's a higher frequency of extreme events. So it's a little bit difficult to predict. It kind of depends, I guess, on frequency of extreme events, you know, and I guess mean temperature. So we don't really know. We'd like to find out more. We need more research funding.
Always. So I guess it is a really fascinating paper. And as you mentioned earlier, sex reversal is probably a lot more common than a lot of people appreciate. And I guess I wonder what you both think is the key message in this paper. So if you had to distill down this sort of key idea that you're hoping people are going to take away from this paper when they read it, what do you think that would be?
So the key general message, I guess, from this paper for me is that sex determination is firstly way more complicated and way more labile than people appreciate. And things that sort of appear immutable from the outside can actually change really rapidly in response to a change in selective pressures. And in this case, sex determination is intimately linked with our environment. And things that we think might be safe when it comes to climate change, for example, you know, something with identifiable sex chromosomes, we think, you know, that's not going to be affected by climate change. It's got sex chromosomes, it'll be fine. But here we can show that there are cases where environmental conditions can fundamentally change not only how that organism changes sex, it can change from either being a genetic to a temperature dependent system. That's like a massive change, which people thought would be, you know, occurring on an evolutionary millions of years time scale. But we've shown that that can happen in a couple of generations if you have the right conditions. So it can happen way more rapidly. And also the fact that that event not only changes the sex determination system, but it's fundamentally changing the genome. I mean, if you're losing the Y chromosome as a result to these changes in environment, you're fundamentally altering these organisms. And this is kind of a, you know, really unexpected consequence of climate change. And it's one of those things where, you know, we all know climate change is bad and that it's going to have impacts, but there's things out there that can happen that you would never imagine. And this is, you know, maybe one of these sort of things that is not at the forefront of our mind, but the fact that we can have, yeah, fundamental change in the life history of organisms and their genomes in a matter of generations, I think is really important.
Perfect. I mean, it is a really fascinating system, and it does seem like a really important topic. And hopefully people will, now having listened, go and read your paper. And I wonder if, just to finish up, if you could remind us what your paper is called and also give a shout out to your co-authors.
The paper is called High Elevation Increases the Risk of Y Chromosome Losses in Alpine Skink Population with Sex Reversal. And I would like to thank and mention here my primary supervisor, Arthur Georges, and Janine Deacon from University of Canberra. And also Claire is here with us today as my supervisor. Also, I would like to thank my colleagues at UC who helped me at the field and our funding organizations. Thank you.
Could I also just definitely put a shout out to Arthur Georges, who is our fearless leader of this research program, I guess. Can I also have a bit of a shout out to the collections, including the Australian National Wildlife Collection, that contributed to this research? Because I think going forward, as we learn more about sex determination systems, the impact of national collections is going to become really evident, because, you know, this is where we're going to be able to look at temporal changes. So as we learn more about sex determination systems, like, we don't know much about whether, you know, various species have X, Y or ZW sex chromosomes. But once we find that out, as I said, that other side of the coin is the phenotype. And so collections are going to become a really important reservoir for that sort of information. And it's also going to give us that element of temporal change about which direction are we going? Are we going in a way that we're going to lose sex chromosomes, or are we heading in a more stable direction? So I guess, you know, in my role as a scientist at National Collections, I just want to sort of have a bit of a plug for the utility of these institutions and the specimens that they hold.
Yeah, definitely. These collections are an incredible but often underappreciated resource that people should definitely be taking more advantage of. But yeah, so thank you very much, both of you, for joining me and sharing your wonderful research.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks to Deminder and Claire. You can find their paper on the Heredity website. That's nature.com/HDY. While you're there, you can also check out how to submit your own papers to the journal. Heredity is the official journal of the Genetic Society. You can subscribe to the Heredity podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and you can follow us on Twitter. That's at Heredity Journal. If you want to get in touch with me directly, drop me an email at hereditypodcast.gen@gmail.com. I'm James Bergen. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.